Hello, and welcome to our program, Seniorific News, February issue, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Patty Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from Seniorific News here on OWL Radio. Our first article is titled, Watch for These Behaviors by Your Registered Financial Professional. This is from FINRA, which is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. FINRA and other financial regulators work hard every day to protect investors from fraud, scams, and misconduct by investment professionals. But at the end of the day, diligent and vigilant investors are their own best first line of defense. A qualified registered financial professional can help you make sound investment decisions, assist with financial goal setting, and keep you informed about how the economy and financial markets are affecting your investment portfolio. Most registered financial professionals are trustworthy individuals who act with integrity. Unfortunately, some are not. Use BrokerCheck to research anyone you're considering working with and keep an eye out for signs of misconduct throughout the course of these relationships. Certain behaviors that FINRA has observed raise red flags and often warrant disciplinary action. Often these red flags aren't too difficult to spot. Here are five behaviors that should have you asking questions. Number one, asking for a personal loan. FINRA rules prohibit registered financial professionals from borrowing money from their customers except in certain circumstances, such as if the customer is a family member. While you might like your registered financial professional and have a desire to help him out if asked, a loan, if not repaid, can increase your chance of financial harm. Unfortunately, such situations often come to FINRA's attention only after the individual has failed to repay the customer or an estate discovers the existence of a loan. These loans agreements often aren't documented in writing, making it more difficult to recoup losses if your registered financial professional doesn't fulfill the agreed upon obligations. In addition, registered financial professionals seeking personal loans will typically instruct investors to transfer funds from their brokerage account to their personal bank account before loaning the funds in an attempt to evade firm detection. For example, the FINRA fined and suspended one California-based registered financial professional who borrowed $78,000 from an elderly customer through five separate loans, in amounts ranging from $3,000 to $4,000, and used all of the funds for personal expenses. None of these loans had any payment terms, met any of the conditions set forth in the firm's policies, or complied with FINRA rules. The registered financial professional concealed the loans from his firm by instructing the customer to wire the loan proceeds from one of her brokerage accounts to her personal checking account, which she held outside of the firm, and then to write a check payable to a member of his immediate family. On one occasion, he instructed the customer to wire money directly from her brokerage account to his mother-in-law, again to evade detection by his firm. After receiving a complaint from the customer's estate, the registered financial professional then repaid each of the five loans. Excuse me. If your registered financial professional asks for a loan, check with the firm regarding their policy. Check with the firm regarding their policy about such transactions. And in general, if asked to move money from a brokerage account to a separate bank account in advance of another type of transaction, be very cautious. Number two, selling promissory notes. Be wary of any pitch for a promissory note. A promissory note is a form of debt that companies sometimes use to raise money. Bona fide notes are marketed almost exclusively to corporate and accredited investors. While they can be legitimate, high-risk investments, many promissory notes sold widely to individual, non-accredited investors are fraudulent. In one notable case, FINRA expelled a Washington, D.C.-based financial firm and barred its CEO from the financial industry for the fraudulent sale of promissory notes. The firm and its CEO were ordered to pay $13.7 million in restitution to 59 investors, the majority of whom were current and former NFL and NBA players. While the victims in this case were former NFL and NBA players, plenty of ordinary investors risk losing money to such investments as well. In fact, there have been instances of registered financial professionals attempting to issue fraudulent promissory notes in exchange for personal loans. Number three, using personal email or text messages. Exercise caution if your registered financial professional begins communicating through channels such as texting or social media apps. In order to monitor and enforce compliance with federal securities laws and FINRA rules, FINRA requires registered firms to make and preserve books and records related to their business. Required records include communications between registered financial professionals and their customers. FINRA also requires firms to have procedures for reviewing incoming and outgoing written communications with customers, including electronic communication like email and texts. In general, FINRA and the Securities and Exchange Commission rules don't prohibit the use of personal email accounts, text messaging, or other electronic messaging applications, often called off-channel communications, as long as the firm monitors, captures, and retains those records as required. Since maintaining outside records can be difficult, many firms have internal policies prohibiting or limiting the use of such communications. The SEC has taken a strong stance against firms' failure to maintain proper records of off-channel communications, including one enforcement action fining 11 firms a combined $289 million. FINRA often finds that registered financial professionals who use personal email or other off-channel means of communication not compliant with firm policies do so to circumvent the firm's review for compliance with important investor protection rules and regulations. These off-channel messages might include exaggerated claims about returns, performance guarantees, pressure to decide quickly about an investment, or other content inconsistent with federal securities laws and FINRA rules. Furthermore, if your registered financial professional isn't compliant when their firm's policy and the firm can't monitor their communications, it can't proactively identify concerning activities and, if needed, address any issues that might impact your investments. Number four, asking you to transfer funds to a person or entity other than the firm. As a general rule, if you're investing through an account at a particular financial firm, you should make all deposits directly to the financial firm and double-check that you have the right firm name and deposit information. If your registered financial professional pitches an investment that requires you to write a check to them or a third party, proceed with caution and verify with the firm that this is in fact its protocol. It should be a sign of fraud or that the financial firm doesn't approve or sanction the investment. FINRA permanently bars registered financial professionals who it finds have instructed customers to write an investment check to a fraudulent account and then taken their money. One such individual convinced multiple customers to send him more than $1 million, purportedly to invest on their behalf. At the registered financial professional's request, many of the customers sent him checks made payable not to the brokerage firm, but to another entity. He didn't disclose that he controlled the other entity, and instead of investing the money for the customers as promised, he took the money and used it for his own expenses. Number 5, requesting to become a beneficiary. Even if you feel you've developed a close relationship with your registered financial professional, a request for you to name them as a beneficiary or hold another position of trust is a red flag. With limited exceptions, FINRA rules prohibit registered financial professionals from being named a beneficiary of a customer's estate or receiving a bequest from a customer's estate. Likewise, they cannot hold a position of trust, such as executor, trustee, power of attorney, or similar position for or on behalf of a customer unless certain conditions are satisfied. Holding such a role could create potential conflicts of interest for the registered financial professional and could impact the investment recommendations they make to you. If you suspect improper business conduct due to these or any other behaviors, contact the firm's compliance department, preferably in writing. Retain a copy of your letter and other related correspondence with the firm. If you don't receive a satisfactory response to your complaint from the firm, contact FINRA. Remember, it's your money and your registered financial professional works for you. You should never feel pressured by them or uncomfortable with their conduct. Our second article, U.S. men die nearly 6 years before women as life expectancy gap widens. This is from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. We've known for more than a century that women outlive men, but new research led by Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and UC San Francisco shows that, at least in the United States, the gap has been widening for more than a decade. The trend is being driven by the COVID-19 pandemic and the opioid overdose epidemic, among other factors. In a research paper published online in JAMA Internal Medicine, the authors found the difference between how long American men and women live increased to 5.8 years in 2021, the largest it's been since 1996. This is an increase from 4.8 years in 2010, when the gap was at its smallest in recent history. The pandemic, which took a disproportionate toll on men, was the biggest contributor to the widening gap from 2019 through 2021, followed by unintentional injuries and poisonings, mostly drug overdoses, accidents, and suicide. There's been a lot of research into the decline in life expectancy in recent years, but no one has systemically analyzed why the gap between men and women has been widening since 2010, said first author Brandon Yan, a UCSF internal medicine resident physician and research collaborator at Harvard Chan School. Life expectancy in the U.S. dropped in 2021 to 76.1 years, falling from 78.8 years in 2019 and 77 years in 2020. The shortening lifespan of Americans has been attributed in part to so-called deaths of despair. The term refers to the increase in deaths from such causes as suicide, drug use disorders, and alcohol liver disease, which are often connected with economic hardship, depression, and stress. While rates of death from drug overdose and homicide have climbed for both men and women, it is clear that men constitute an increasingly disproportionate share of these deaths, Yan says. Using data from the National Center for Health Statistics, Yan and fellow researchers from around the country identified the causes of death that were lowering life expectancy the most. Then they estimated the effects on men and women to see how much different causes were contributing to the gap. Prior to the COVID pandemic, the largest contributors were unintentional injuries, diabetes, suicide, homicide, and heart disease. But during the pandemic, men were more likely to die of the virus. That was likely due to a number of reasons, including differences in health behaviors, as well as social factors such as the risk of exposure at work, reluctance to seek medical care, incarceration and housing instability. Chronic metabolic disorders, mental illness, and gun violence also contributed. Yan said the results raise questions about whether more specialized care for men, such as in mental health, should be developed to address the growing disparity in life expectancy. We have brought insights to a worrisome trend, Yan said. Future research ought to help focus public health interventions towards helping reverse this decline in life expectancy. Yan and co-authors, including senior author Howard Koh, professor of the practice of public health leadership at Harvard Chan School, also noted that further analysis is needed to see if these trends change after 2021. We need to track these trends closely as the pandemic recedes, Koh said, and we must make significant investments in prevention and care to ensure that this widening disparity among others do not become entrenched. Our next article is titled Recent Changes to Medicare Dental Coverage by Meredith Freed, Tricia Newman, and Juliet Kubanski from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Medicare does not offer broad coverage of dental services under traditional Medicare, but through recent regulatory action, the Biden administration has taken steps to modify Medicare payment policies to expand the types of dental services that are covered. In both 2023 and 2024, Medicare physician fee schedule final rules, the administration made changes to Medicare payment policies for certain dental services, in addition to other payments and policy changes. The 2023 rule clarifies CMS's interpretation of when medically necessary dental services can be covered and codifies certain payment policies. In both the 2023 and 2024 rules, define new clinical scenarios for which Medicare payment can be made for dental services. These rules modestly expand the types of dental services that are covered under Medicare, including dental or oral examinations prior to any organ transplant surgery, cardiac valve replacement, or valvuloplasty procedures beginning in 2023, and dental oral examinations prior to treatment for head and neck cancer beginning in 2024. Further, based on changes in the 2024 rule, Medicare will cover treatment to address dental complications after radiation, chemotherapy, and/or surgery for head and neck cancer, as well as dental or oral examinations prior to chemotherapy, chimeric antigen receptor T-cell therapy, and the administration of high-dose bone-modifying agents when used in the treatment of cancer. While these changes are projected to benefit a small number of Medicare beneficiaries, They do not represent a broad expansion of Medicare coverage of dental services and will not substantially increase Medicare spending or covered dental services for a large number of Medicare beneficiaries. CMS evaluated clinical evidence for additional dental services to determine whether they are substantially related and integral to the clinical success of other covered services. Based on this evidence, payment can now be made under Medicare Parts A and B for the following. And I'm going to skip the 2023 rule since we're in 2024 now. Here's the 2024 rule. Diagnostic and treatment services to address dental or oral complications after radiation, chemotherapy, and/or surgery when used in the treatment of head and neck cancer. Dental or oral examinations, including necessary treatment, performed as part of a comprehensive workup prior to or at the same time as chemotherapy, chimeric antigen receptor T-cell therapy, and the administration of high-dose bone-modifying agents, anti-resorptive therapy, when used in the treatment of cancer beginning in 2024. As part of the 2023 final rule, CMS described how it will use the Physician Fee Schedule annual rulemaking process to determine whether additional dental services should be considered for payment under Medicare. CMS will make this determination based on evidence from relevant peer-reviewed medical literature and research studies, clinical guidelines, or generally accepted standards of care for the suggested clinical scenario and other supporting documentation. CMS used this process to determine that payment should be made for the dental services described above that were finalized in the 2024 rule. Impact on Medicare beneficiaries and payments. CMS estimates that approximately 190,000 additional dental services could be covered by Medicare prior to organ transplants, cardiac valve replacement, valvuloplasty procedures. An additional 155,000 beneficiaries might receive dental services for which Medicare could be paid relating to chemotherapy, CAR T-cell therapy, and bone-modifying agents for cancer, as well as treatment for head and neck cancers beginning in 2024. And now, for one more article. Alzheimer's drugs might get into the brain faster with new ultrasound tools, study shows, by Lauren Neergard, AP Medical Writer. Scientists have found a way to help Alzheimer's drugs seep inside the brain faster by temporarily breaching its protective shield. The novel experiment was a first attempt in just 3 patients, but in spots in the brain where the new technology took aim, it enhanced removal of Alzheimer's trademark brain-clogging plaque, researchers reported. Our goal is to give patients a head start by boosting some new Alzheimer's treatments that take a long time to work, said Dr. Ali Razai of West Virginia University's Rockefeller Neuroscience Institute, who led the study. At issue is what's called the blood-brain barrier, a protective lining in blood vessels that prevents germs and other damaging substances from leaching into the brain from the bloodstream, but also can block drugs for Alzheimer's, tumors, and other neurologic diseases, requiring higher doses for longer periods for enough to reach their target inside the brain. Now scientists are using a technology called focused ultrasound to jiggle temporary openings in that shield. They inject microscopic bubbles into the bloodstream. Next, they beam sound waves through a helmet-like device to a precise brain area. The pulses of energy vibrate the microbubbles, which loosen gaps in the barrier enough for medications to sleep in. Prior small studies have found the technology can safely poke tiny holes that seal up in 48 hours. Now Razai's team has gone a step further, administering an Alzheimer's drug at the same time. Some new Alzheimer's drugs on the market or in the pipeline promise to modestly slow worsening of the mind-robbing disease. They're designed to clear away a sticky protein called beta amyloid that builds up in certain brain regions, but they require IV infusions every few weeks for at least 18 months. Why not try to clear the plaques within a few months, Rezai said, his rationale for the proof of concept study. His team gave three patients with mild Alzheimer's monthly doses of one such drug, Aduhelm, for 6 months. Right after each IV, researchers aimed the focused ultrasound on a specific amyloid clogged part of each patient's brain, opening the blood-brain barrier so more of that day's dose might enter that spot. PET scans show patients' amyloid levels before and after the 6 months of medication. There was about 32% greater plaque reduction in spots where the blood-brain barrier was breached compared to the same region on the brain's opposite side, researchers reported in the New England Journal of Medicine. This pilot study is elegant but too tiny to draw any conclusions, cautioned Dr. Elazer Maslia of the National Institute on Aging. Still, it's very exciting, compelling data, added Maslia, who wasn't involved with the research. It opens the door for more extensive, larger studies, definitely. Alzheimer's isn't the only target. Other researchers are testing if breaching the blood-brain barrier could allow more chemotherapy to reach brain tumors and ways to target other diseases. You have been listening to Seniorific News, February issue on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Patty Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio.